Okay, we're going to begin here on the top of Gimel Amud Aleph, 8 lines down. The Gemara is discussing the authorship of the Mishnah. The Gemara discussed the fact that the Mishnah is not like bananas. It says that we should try to avoid a situation with Veshua Jav. The Gemara came up with the way to fit in bananas in our Mishnah because it's possible that it's true what both parties are saying over here. Then the Gemara says that the Mishnah is not like Sumchus, who says that Mamon Mutalba Safek Chokim below Shvua, and our Mishnah requires Chokim Bishvua. Once again, the Gemara says that even according to Sumchus, maybe our Mishnah is different, and it left off with the fact that Rabbi Yochanan says the Shvua in our Mishnah is a Shvua de Rabbanan. Meikar Adin, if Sumchus would believe that you don't need a Shvua over here, but the Chachamim imposed a Shvua in order to prevent people from coming along and grabbing other people's avedot and property and trying to make a claim because they wouldn't be compelled to make a Shvua. So the Chachamim imposed a Shvua to stop that type of behavior. And that institution was only put in place in times that it is matsui, events or circumstances that are common. That's where the Chachamim put in the institution. In other scenarios, like the Mishnah and Baba Kama, which is not a common case where they're bartering and the cow gives birth in the middle of the barter transaction, that we didn't put in an institution of the Chachamim. Now the Gemara brings a third possibility about who's not the author. Gemara says, Lema Matznitan de Loki Rabbi Yossi. Let's say that our Mishnah can't be authored by Rabbi Yossi as well. De Iki Rabbi Yossi. Hamar Imkein Mahifsida Ramai. Because Rabbi Yossi has this position, then the thief or the cheater over here will lose nothing. But rather, everything should be left until Eliyahu. What the Gemara here is referencing is a case that we will see later on in the Masechta, which is two individuals deposited money with a single shomer. One of them deposited 200 zuz, one of them deposited 100 zuz. Then they both show up and they're both making a claim for the 200 zuz. So now the shomer is only holding 300 zuz because he got a deposit of 200 and a deposit of 100. Both parties or both depositors are coming along and say, mine was the 200. So they have a claim for 400. So the Chachamim, or the Tanakama, Rabbi Yossi says, you give each of them 100, because we know at minimum each of them had 100. And the last 100, which is the Safek, Ye Munach HaShivu Eliyahu, that goes into escrow, is left with the Beitin until Eliyahu comes and straightens out the issue for us. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says that that does not disincentivize the thief or the cheater over here from making his claim, because he has no downside. The worst scenario is he gets his money back. The better scenario is that he's believed and now he ends up with more money. So what Rabbi Yossi says is that you have to make it that the thief will have downside, so he'll think twice about doing this. So what Rabbi Yossi says is we don't give any of the money back. All of that 300 is deposited into an escrow with the Beit Din and waits for Eliyahu Navi. Now the depositor who's cheating, who gave in 100 and now is claiming 200, he will lose. Because his claim will now force him to lose the 100 that he deposited. Now he'll get nothing back. So now he is disincentivized from making this claim, unless it's true, because he will then end up with 0 instead of at least 100. In the other scenario, he ends up with his money back, or better. In this scenario, he will actually lose money, because Rabbi Yossi says he'll get nothing back, and so therefore he really has to be careful about the claim. That's Rabbi Yossi's position. And now, what the Gemara is suggesting is that Rabbi Yossi won't fit into our Mishnah, because in our Mishnah we have a safek here, and instead of saying let's withhold the object from both parties, we say they should split it. So that means that we're giving it back to them. We're not holding back. We're not doing anything to incentivize telling them the truth. I says elamai rabbanon. So you're going to say it's not Rabbi Yossi. It'll be the rabbanon, the Tanakama of that position. Kaven de amri rabbanon asher yemunach hashivu Eliyahu. Even the Rabbanan agree that we only return the 100 that each one of them has a definitive claim on that is uncontested. But the contested amount, that goes into escrow with Beit Din until Eliyahu Navi comes. Ha, Nami, our Mishnah is the equivalent to Kishar Demei, Desfeki. It is similar to the leftover or the residual money that's contested. Even the Chachamim agree on the contested money that you put that into escrow with Beit Din until Eliyahu Navi. So our Mishnah, which is contested object, that should be put in an escrow until Eliyahu Navi comes, because we can't determine who it belongs to. So it sounds like it's not Rabbi Yossi, but also sounds like it can't even be the Chachamim who authored this Mishnah. Haimai, the Gemara says, wait a minute, you can't compare the cases. Iyamart bishlamar Rabbanon, if you say the Rabbanon are the author of our Mishnah, hotam devadei haimane dechad minayuhu, over there by the case of the deposits, we know for certain that the money belongs to one of the two parties. Again, it's a binary outcome. You have each of them getting 100. The 100 that's contested belongs to one party, either A or B. It does not belong to both of them. It certainly not should not be split. We have to figure out which party it belongs to. But that's binary in nature. So therefore, Amei Rabbanan Yemunach HaShivo Eliyahu. Therefore, the Rabbanan say, since we can't determine who it belongs to, let us leave it in escrow with the Beit Din until Eliyahu Navi comes and straightens it out for us. Hocha Deikal Meimer the Tarvayu. Here, what you could say that really belongs to both parties, because of the scenario or situation in which they picked it up simultaneously. So it's possible that there's a third outcome over here. Unlike the case of Rabbi Yossi, which is a binary outcome, it either belongs to A or belongs to B, our Mishnah has a third possibility. It belongs to A, belongs to B, or belongs to A and B, which is that they picked it up simultaneously. Therefore, Amrei Rabbanan Palgei Bishvua. That's why in our Mishnah they say you can divide it evenly and take a Shvua to that effect. Because that outcome is a plausible outcome in our Mishnah, which isn't true in the other case. Eliyamar Rabbi Yossi, if you say that Rabbi Yossi is the author of our Mishnah, Hashto Mahotam Dibivadai Ika Manelamar Ika Manelamar, over there where we know for certain at least the minimum of 100 belongs to each party. Meaning that 100 belongs to A, 100 belongs to B. It's a question about the other 100, whether it goes to A or B. Over there where we know who it belongs to, Amar Rabbi Yossi Emunach HaShivo Eliyahu, there Rabbi Yossi opines and says that it should be all put into escrow and wait for Eliyahu Navi. Hacha de'ikla meimar dechad minayuhu lo koshekein. In our case where we don't know for certain who it is, it could belong to A or it could belong to B in the case of the Aveda, then certainly he's going to say keep it in escrow. In the case where there's no safek, he says keep it in escrow until Eliyahu Navi. So here in a case where there is a safek, you're even more reason to leave it until Eliyahu Navi and put it into escrow. It says, Afilu Teima Rabbi Yossi. Even Rabbi Yossi can be the author of our Mishnah. Hotam Vadai Ika Ramai. Over there in the case of the deposits, there definitely is a cheater over here. We know one of the two guys is lying. Because we only have 300 deposited, and they're both making a claim for 200. So one of the two parties is certainly a liar. Hocha Miyemar Ika Ramai. In our case, it's not certain that one of them is a thief. Maybe they both picked it up simultaneously. Now, their claim is Kula Shali, and the other party's claim is Kula Shali. So they're not making a claim that they picked it up simultaneously, but their view or perspective is not unreasonable. Even if they did pick it up simultaneously, this individual thought he picked it up first. The other one thinks he picked it up first. So they both make a claim that it's all theirs. But it doesn't mean that they are necessarily cheating, intentionally misleading, because it's possible that what they're saying is true, or how they, the perspective from which they see it, it's true in that way. And so therefore, Rabbi Yossi over there says we want to penalize the thief, we want to penalize the liar, so then we put in place a mechanism to penalize him and force him to tell the truth. In our case, in the Mishnah, we're not certain that there's somebody cheating. We're not certain that someone is lying. And so for that reason, there you can't impose a fine on them, because that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get a better answer, because it may be that they're telling the truth in this situation. Inami, the other possibility is, Hotam konis le Rabbi Yossi le Ramai, keichel le lodik. Over there, Rabbi Yossi penalizes the thief that he loses money in order to generate an admission. Which means that not only do we know that there's a thief over there, we also know that there is a loss of money that could be generated. So those two things precipitate a fine or a penalty, which is that we confiscate all the money. Because in that case, we know for sure one of them is cheating or lying. We also know that if we withhold all the money, that that individual will lose out. So therefore, there's a downside to making the claim, and that will cause him to tell the truth, because if he thinks about the situation, he's better off just telling the truth and getting his 100 back than lying and then getting nothing back. So therefore, that's why we impose that sanction over there. Over here, even if you sanction them and you keep the object and don't give it back, then he doesn't lose anything. It's an aveda. They found it. So his original stance is that he's getting nothing. And then if you penalize him, he's getting nothing. He's no worse off than he was before. Here again, he only has upside. His upside is that he gets a portion of the Aveda. His downside is he gets nothing. That's where he was before. So over here, there's no benefit to confiscating the property and not giving it back. because that won't cause him to admit to the fact that he's lying, because again, it doesn't generate a downside for him. The whole point of Rabbi Yossi is to generate pseda, to generate a downside, and therefore have him admit to the fact that he is lying or not tell a lie, because it's not to his benefit. Gemara says that reasoning only works tinach mitzia. That only works when it's talking about a mitzia. Mekach u'memkar, ma'ika l'meimar. But if it's a transactional issue, then what are you going to say? Remember that Rav Papa already established that our Mishnah has two cases in it. Our Mishnah has a case of mitzia, and has a case of mekach u'memkar. So what the Gemara is saying is that this second answer that you gave on behalf of Rabbi Yossi, that works well when you're talking about a mitzia. By a mitzia, then you have zero downside and all upside. But in the case of mekach u'memkar, there is downside over here, because both of them paid the mocher the money, and now they're going to give the object to one of the two parties. If we confiscate everything, then the Ramai has a downside. We're going to take away both of their payments for the object and the object itself. Now the thief has to think twice before he does it. If he tells the truth and says that I didn't buy it or I was the second one to buy it, he'll get his money back. If he goes ahead and lies and makes a claim that he was also a purchaser of the object, or he's the one that purchased it willingly from the seller, now both parties are making that claim. We're going to confiscate the money and the object, and he's actually out money. So there is downside for him in our case, the Mishnah. If that's the case, you can't differentiate between the case of the deposits further on in the Gemara versus our case in the Mishnah, where you're talking about mekach u'memkar. In both those cases, you have seda. There you do have downside, and therefore there would be a reason to impose it to cause him to admit to the fact that he is lying. So Gemara says, Ela mechavarta kideshaninan meikara. We have to go back to the original assumption. So now, Ella, we know, we've discussed this many times, means that the Gemara has now rejected the previous stance and is now going to a different stance. In the Gemara before, we had two positions that differentiated the case of the depositors further on in the Gemara. One is that there we know for certain there is a Ramai, we know there is a thief. The second thing that differentiated it is that it has Seda, that there is downside, or that the individual will lose money if we impose the sanction. Now, when the Gemara says Ella over here, is it going back to the original stance, which is that only if there's a certain, we know for sure there's a Ramai, a cheater, will we impose the sanctions, even if it doesn't result in a loss for the Ramai, even though he's just back to zero and he loses nothing, nevertheless, we will impose the sanctions as long as we know for sure there's a liar over there? Or do we preserve this idea that you need both? We need a certain Ramai, plus you need a Pseda. You need both of those to generate the need for a sanction, according to Rabbi Yossi. So Tosafot wavers on this, and he doesn't know which way the Gemara is going when it says El over here. He says that from the Gemara, it sounds like you need both items still. You need a certain Ramai and Hefseid. So that's what he says here. Delo kanis Rabbi Yossi le'echad ikka vadai Ramai v'idle Pseida. He says, Miu lashon ela mashma dehader legamrei. But Miu sounds like they backed out of the second assumption completely, which means that Pseida is not important. The loss is not important. It's just the fact that there's a Ramai here that is important. And we'll actually see that in the upcoming Gemara, that it seems that the Gemara is reading that way, that we don't need a loss. We just simply need a Ramai for certainty in order to generate this sanction of Rabbi Yossi where we confiscate everything. And Rabbi Kiva Eger over here leaves a slight sarachiyun because he says you can't come up with a case by mekach u'memkar where it would pay for the individual to admit or say the truth because he could lose out. And he says here, he brings a scenario in which the cheater would lose money because one of the parties is missing and we can't get the information, and therefore we're going to withhold all the money. So there are circumstances or situations where you can create a downside for him. And so that could possibly be the explanation of the Mishnah, though the Gemara rejects it outright and says that that isn't the explanation for the Mishnah, or at least to fit Rabbi Yossi in. Now the Gemara says, Ben the Rabbanon, Ben the Rabbi Yossi, I mean, whether Rabbi Yossi or the Tanakama, the Rabbanon, who are the opposing view to Rabbi Yossi, Hatam, by the case of Chenvani al Pinkaso. If you remember, we dealt with this yesterday. This is the case in which the owner hired workers. They finish the work, and he says, instead of paying you, I want you to go to the makolet, pick out whatever you want, and I've already established a credit line for you there, and then I'll pay back the credit line. So then the poalim come to him and say, we never got paid, and we want to get our money. The chenvani, the storekeeper, comes along and says, well, your workers took all of this stuff, and now you got to pay me. So now he has a claim from two different parties, a claim from the Poalim and a claim from the Chenbani. Over there we said, Tani, Zenishba Benotel, Zenishba Benotel. The Mishnah in Shavuot says that in that case, the Poalim take a Shavua and they get paid out. And then the Chenbani takes a Shavua and he gets paid out. And the Balabayit is out his money, meaning he has to pay twice over there in order to satisfy the situation. And it's saying now, why, according to the Chachamim or Rabbi Yossi, is that the outcome? Maishna delomina nafke de mamona mi Balabayit, beimunach ad shivo Eliyahu. The more equitable solution seems to be that we have the Balabayit paying the money. He definitely owes a certain amount of money. We just don't know who the beneficiary should be. Should it go to the Poalim? It should go to the Chenbani. So what he should do is pay in the money, and then it should go to Beit Din, stay in escrow at Beit Din, and then they'll pay it out when they figure out who is the rightful owner of this. That's whether according to Rabbanan or according to Rabbi Yossi. So then that Mishnah and Shavuot, how do we understand that based on their opinions here? So the Haba Vadai Ikar Ramai. Because over there, we have that qualification that there is certainly is a Ramai. So over here, this might back up what Tosfot said before, that that's the only qualification now we need in order to Rabbi Yossi and to impose a sanction is that you have a Ramai. So over there, we know one of the two are lying because their positions are mutually exclusive. It can't be that the Poalim are owed money and the Chenbani is owed money. And why don't we then sanction them and put the money away until you have a Sheva Eliyahu? So Amrei Hata Mainu Taima, the reason over there is different. Damrei Chenbani the Balabait, the storekeeper can say to the owner, Ana shlichuta didach kavidna. I did what you asked of me. I was your proxy, I was your agent, and I carried out my agency. That's what you hired me to do. Ma'itli gabe schir. I have nothing to do with these workers. These workers, I have no relationship with it. Vavagav de mishtaboli, and even if they take a shvua, lo mehemenli bishvua. I don't believe their shvua. I have no relationship with them, and you can't impose that relationship on me. My relationship is with you, and you asked me to do something, and I did it. At hemante, delo amartli besade havule. And you trusted me, because you didn't say to me, only do this with edim. Make sure you have witnesses to the fact that they're taking it, and that I'm gonna owe you money. You placed your trust in me, and that's the relationship that I'm basing my claim on. I have nothing to do with these poalim. Uschir nami. And the poalim themselves can make the same counterclaim, which is, Amrulei, the Balabayit, they can say to the Balabayit, Ana avdei avita gabach, we work for you. Ma'ili gabi chenvani, we have no relationship with the storekeeper, we just want to get paid for our work. You had the relationship with the storekeeper, you can deal with him, whether he's lying or not lying, we didn't get anything. So avagav de mishtabali lo me'emenli, and if the chenvani takes the shvua, we are not interested in it because we have no relationship and we don't believe him necessarily. Hilkach tavayu mishtabde vishakle mi Balabayit. Therefore, each party takes a shvua and collects from the Balabayit. Because over there, the Balabayit can't impose that the relationship between the Poalim and the Chenbani becomes a relationship of trust. The Balabayit can't impose a relationship on the two parties. He's the man that joins the two parties together, but they themselves have no relationship between them. And so therefore, they can't be forced to trust the other party. And that's why he has to pay out over there. Tosfot over here does raise an interesting issue, which is that generally when we have somebody act as a shliach, as an agent, we say, litkune shudartich velo leivute. The Balabayit can say to the shliach, I sent you to do something for my benefit, not to my detriment. And we say there that the shlichut, the agency is terminated automatically if the person does not act to the benefit of the sender. The example is a case where the Balabayit sends out someone to pay back a loan, and get back the shtar, get back the document that evidences the loan. The individual goes and pays the money, and then the people say, we're not giving you back the shtar, you owed us money for something else. That shliach has to now pay back the Balabayit, because he didn't do something to the benefit of the Balabayit. He hurt the Balabayit. He gave the money, didn't get the shtar back, and so now the Balabayit says, I didn't send you to lose my money and not get the shtar back, I sent you to do the right thing. And so then the agency is terminated, and the shliach is out the money, and the Balabayit should not lose money there. So why don't we say the same thing over here about the Chenbani? The Chenbani is acting on behalf of the Balabayit. Why should his actions be to the detriment of the Balabayit? He says, money to the Poalim, and now the Poalim are denying it. Had he given it in front of Edim, he could have protected the Balabayit. So why don't we invoke that principle that I didn't send you to do my detriment, and that's what's happening over here. So Tosfot answers and says that the cases are different. In the case of the repayment of the loan and the shtar, the Baal HaBayit mentions that he wants the shtar back. He doesn't mention whether give the money first and get the shtar, or get the shtar and then give the money. He doesn't discuss which order to do it in. But still, the mention of the shtar is already indicative to the agent that this Baal HaBayit wants evidence back that he's repaid the loan. In our case, the issue of Edim was not raised at all. The Baal HaBayit never says in the Chanmeni anything about Edim. So then for us to say that the agent is under a responsibility to get Edim, when the Baal HaBayit didn't even have it in mind or never mentioned it at all, that we're not going to go so far as to say. So when we say that an agent has to do the right thing, that's in a scenario where he has information. With that information, he's got to do the best that he can, which is the best outcome for the sender or the principal. Over here, where the principal doesn't mention anything, the agent's under no obligation then to do more than he was told, or come up with extra information, or do something extra, like add in Edim to the case, when the Baal HaBayit never even mentioned that. Because he trusted them, and he trusted everyone. If that's the case, then the Chanmeni is not under obligation to do that. Right now, we move on to a new sugya, which is Tani Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia says, Mana li biyadecha. If a person says, you owe me 100 zuz, v'halo merin lecha biyadikum. And the other party says, kofer bakol, denies that I owe you anything. I owe you nothing. Ve'edim edim oto she'esh lo 50 zuz. The edim show up and say, you owe him 50. You're right, you don't owe him 100, but you do owe him 50. Noten lo 50 zuz. He has to pay the 50 zuz that the edim are testifying about. Vayishava l'shar. And then he takes a shvua on the remaining amount that he is denying. So it won't work out that his own statement will be greater than the statement or the testimony of the edim. And we're going to learn that from a kal v'chomer, which we'll deal with in a minute or two. What the chiddush of Rabbi Chiya is over here is that he says that modeh b'miksat can be generated both by the party themselves or by the edim that come and impose on him that he has to pay modeh b'miksat, he has to pay miksat. We know from the Torah that if their party makes a claim, like for 100 zuz, the other party says, I don't owe you 100, but I owe you 50. That's what's called modeh b'miksat. He admits to the 50 that he owes. He denies the other 50. That modeh b'miksat demands a shvua min haTorah. Rabbi Chiya comes along and says, that's not only true when the person themselves generates the modeh b'miksat, but it's even in a case where the edim are imposing the modeh b'miksat on the individual. Where the edim say, you only owe 50, not 100. So the edim there are therefore saying, pay the 50, and then you're denying the other 50. That denial, according to Rabbi Chiya, necessitates a shvua, just like it does by the case of modeh b'miksat. Then Rabbi Chiya says, v'tana tuna, our Mishnah is supportive of my position. Because in our Mishnah, shnayim uchzim b'talit, zeomer ani mitzatia, zeomer ani mitzatia, our Mishnah says that you have two parties that found an aveda, each one claiming that it's his. V'ha'acha. On that side, the Maida Tavis Hai Dideyu, that whatever this party is holding onto is his, Maida Tavis Hai Dideyu, and what the other party is holding is his. But since in this case, both parties are holding onto the Talit, that is an Anan Sade. That is if we are witness to the fact that they own half of the item. Viktani Yishava. And the conclusion of our Mishnah is that they take a Shvua. So our Mishnah is a case which each party says, Kula Shali, which means that it's all mine, none of it is yours. And the counterparty says the same thing, it's all mine, not yours. Then all of a sudden we have a situation in which they're coming into Beit Din with the Abeda, each of them holding half of it. So now we, when we're looking at the situation, say that Anan Sade, that he has at least half of it, belongs to him because he's holding on to it. He's in possession of it. And so therefore we have a scenario which involves a deem that suggests that they only owe 50, or they're only entitled to 50, and the other 50 is denied. And what our Mishnah says is you take a shvua in that case. So that's the equivalent of a modem mimiksat created through a deem. Not really a deem in our case, but Anan Sade, the fact that they're holding on to the garment, is indicative of the fact that we have edut, or proof to the fact that they own at least half of it. And so now we have a deem countering the claim of it, kula shali, which is basically a modem mimiksat, not through your own admission, but through a deem. And so our Mishnah says you take a shvua, and Rabbi Chiya says that's supportive of my position over here. So now the Gemara says, okay, what did Rabbi Chiya mean when he says that the testimony of the edim should be no worse than his admission from a kal v'chomer? So now the first part of this is, why would you have a havamina to say that edim coming and testifying to the fact that he owes half is different than the case of Modeh B'Miksa. It's different than the case where he admits to owing a half and he is rejecting the other half. Because what you would have thought is, Shlo Tomar, the reason you take a Shwa by Modeh B'Miksa is because the reasoning of Rabbah. Meaning that there's something unique to the scenario of Modeh B'Miksa that causes the imposition of the Shwa that is not extrapolable or applicable to the case of Adat Edim, in the case where Edim come along and force him to pay half and deny the other half. Dama Rabbah, so this is, if you remember from the Gemara in Baba Kama, Daf Kuf Zayin, we just dealt with this, Shita of Rabbah. Mipnei Ma'amra Torah, Modeh B'Miksa, Tatana Yishava. Why does the Torah say that a Modeh B'Miksa has to take a Shua? Chazoko, Ein Adam Me'iz Panav Bifnei Bal Chobo. A person is not brazen to deny the claim of his creditor. Rashi, if you remember, said in Baba Kama, the reason is because it's a Kafui Tov. This person lent him money without interest, and now he's coming along and denying the claim. A person won't do that. A person's not completely Kafui Tov, and therefore, Ein Adam Me'iz Panav Bifnei Bal Chobo, according to Rashi, means he won't deny the creditor a claim when the creditor did him a tova. The other end, the Bali of Tosafot, if you remember over there, was the Shita of the Rabbeinu Tam, then the Shita of the Rivam. On Daf Kuf Zayin, there's a massive Tosafot, very little Gemara there, about this whole issue. And there, Tosafot says that he thinks Rashi is wrong, that Ein Adam Me'iz Panav Bifnei Bal Chobo is not the fact that a person won't be Kafui Tov, but rather that a person won't lie to the face of someone who knows the truth. If the other party knows the truth, a person will not lie completely to their face. If the other party doesn't know the truth, they're more than happy to lie. So over there, if it's the creditor making the claim, then the debtor won't lie to his face because the creditor knows the truth that he wasn't repaid. But then if it's the son of the creditor who's coming to make the claim, then we do worry about the fact that he would lie because the individual doesn't know what happened in the transaction. And therefore, he's more willing to lie. So now Rashi says that the reason that we need to know that Kofer HaKol is not a possible option over here, because if Kofer HaKol denying the whole claim was a possible option over here, then when he says, I owe half, it should be the equivalent of Meshiva Veda, that he's giving back in a lost item. Because the creditor here has no claim against him because of the fact that he could have denied the whole thing. The fact that he actually admits to some of it means that he must be telling the truth. And he's like a Meshiva Veda. The way Tosafot formulates it is, how do you know there's no Migo over here? It should be a Migo that when he's Modeh B'Miksa, he's Patur, because Kofer HaKol is Patur. If Kofer HaKol is Patur, which is the better claim, and then he goes ahead and is Modeh B'Miksa, then Migo that he could have told us that he didn't owe anything, and then he'd been out of here without any problem, then he should be believed in the case where he admits to half of it because he had a better claim, a claim to deny the whole thing. The fact that he admits to a portion of it shows you that he should be believed through a Migo. That Migo is taken away by the fact that Kofer HaKol is not a valid option, according to the Bali of Tosafot, because a person will not be Kofer HaKol when the other party or the counterparty knows that he is lying. So Rashi says it's an issue of Ein Adam Me'iz Panav when there is a need for Hakarat HaTov. A person will not be Kofer HaKol. According to Tosafot, has to do with the knowledge of the counterparty if he really knows that this individual is lying. The nafkamina between them is a pikadon or a shomer. According to Rashi, Ein Adam Me'iz Panav Bifnei Bal Chobo is only applicable to a lender. A lender who gave money and did a tova for you, you won't go against that. But in the case of Shomrim, where there was no tova done, then Me'iz U'Me'iz, Rashi says. Tosafot, on the other hand, disagrees and says that no, even by Pikadon, you can make the same claim, which is, Ein Adam Me'iz Panav Bifnei Bal Chobo means he doesn't lie to the face of someone who knows the truth. And over here, the Shomer will not lie to the Balabayit who knows the truth about whether he gave the object back or did not give the object back. Tosafot says that the statement here of that he should have denied the whole thing and he didn't because Mishum Ein Adam Me'iz Panav. That's coming to tell us why by Modeh B'Miksa you're not believed. Whereas Rashi says that Ein Adam Me'iz Panav B'Yechovo is that he's not Kafui Tov, comes to tell us that Modeh B'Miksa is not Meshiva Veda. Now, as far as Kofer Bakol in this situation of Pikadon, Rashi says, Me'uz U'Me'uz. That is, he definitely would be Me'uz Panav, and therefore we don't necessarily believe him when he's Kofer Bakol. And if he's Modeh B'Miksa, he actually will have a Migo to be believed. Tosafot rejects both of those and says that, number one, Kofar Bakol, even by his Shomer, is in Adamei's Panam, because the other party knows the truth. And therefore, if the other party knows the truth, he won't lie. If he won't lie, then you've taken away the option for Moder B'Mikzat being something where he has a Migo to be believed. Against what Rashi says, that there is that possibility by the case of a Shomer. So then, V'hai Gulei Ba'ilo Dilei, he should really have admitted to the whole amount. V'Ha'ilo Odi, and the reason he's not admitting to the whole amount is Yishtemutehu D'Kamishtamet Minei. He's trying to wiggle out of this to buy himself time so that he can eventually make the payback. So Sovar, he thinks, Ad avali zuzei apranale. I'm going to buy time until I have the money in hand, and then I will pay him. Varma Rachmano, and therefore the Torah says, Rami shvuale, impose a shvuaim, keichindel odile bekule, so that he'll admit to the whole amount. So what Rashi says is, I'm explaining to you now why he's believed by a shvua. The reason he's believed by a shvua is because of the fact that Chashura Mamona, lo Chashura Shvuata. The fact that here he is not trusted with the monetary matter, that he's willing to lie in monetary matters, does not mean that he will lie under oath. Just because he's willing to steal money, doesn't mean that he's willing to say the Shem Shemayim Lebatala and take a Shvuat Shav. Now the truth is, way Rashi is formulated, that's not true in general. In general, we would worry about that scenario, but over here, we're not worried about it. And that's what was explained by Rabbah. The reason we don't say that when we worry about his truth-telling with regards to money or cheating with money, and over there he's cheating and we still tell him to take a shvua, is because the reason he's cheating over here is not really to get out of paying it. In the end, he wants to pay it. He's just trying to buy time so that he can buy it. So the fact that he's chashad amamona is not really a true test of his integrity. Because over here he's being compelled to quote-unquote lie, not lie to get out of paying it back, but just lie to buy time. And so therefore, that lie is not as serious an offense to make you pasul from taking the shvua, and therefore we would say that you could take the shvua. And so that's what the Gemara says now. That's only true when he himself is admitting to the fact that he owes a portion, and he's denying the other part of the claim. Then you could say he was buying time. But by a deem that are coming along, the Lekha Lameimar Achi, where you don't have that logic base, then aim a low. Maybe you would say over there that he doesn't take a shvua. Kamash Malon, Kal V'Chomer. Kamash Malon is the Kal V'Chomer that says, despite that logic, which would have dictated that you shouldn't take a shvua by the Edim, that's overrun by the Kal V'Chomer, which says that if it's true by Moder B'Mikzat, it should definitely be true by Edim, because Edim are always a more stringent scenario than the case of Hodat Atzmo. And that Kal V'Chomer will lead us to believe that if it's true here by Odat Atzmo, it should also be true by the case of Edim, and they both have to take a Shvua. So, in the case where he admits it himself, we would say, even though he's Chashid HaMamona, the Chashid HaMamona derives from a delay tactic, not really in trying not to pay back at all. And so because of that, the fact that he's Chashud Al HaMamona doesn't preclude him from taking a Shvua. On the other hand, by the case of Edim, where he hasn't changed his mind at all, it's just that Edim are forcing him to pay for half of it, but they're forcing him to pay for half of it is not an indication of the fact that he really wanted to tell the truth. Or he was just playing for a delay tactic. He is still in complete denial of the claim. He is forced to pay because of the Edim, but that doesn't mean that he would tell the truth. Over there, he was Chashud HaMamona. He's Chashud to steal the money, and he would be Chashud HaShvuata. And that's how Rashi reads the difference between Moder B'Mikzat and the case of Edim. Tosafot doesn't like Rashi's explanation because the Gemara upcoming is going to tell us that the principle is that even if you're Chashud HaMamona, you're not Chashud HaShvuata. Even though you're Chashud to steal or to withhold payment, you're not Chashud to take a Shvuat Sheker. So Tosafot says that's a general principle. We don't learn that out from Rab over here. That's a general principle that we have anywhere there is an issue of trust or reliability. So Tosafot on the other hand says here, V'yesh lomar, that the meaning of Rabba's statement that, Kulei boi lo dilei klomar, Machar dein adam me'iz, imke me'emetu, she'en chayav lo yoter. If the person will not be me'iz to deny the whole thing, then he should be believed that he's not chayav anymore. V'lama yishava, yei neman b'migo. Why does he have to take a shvua? He should be believed to amigo. Di ba yikofer akol. Because if he wanted to, he'd be kofar akol and get out of everything. Mishani de'en ze'a'aza de'shmute kamishati. Gemara says that's not a ha'aza, Because over here he's not trying to deny the claim completely, he's just trying to wiggle his way out. And so since he's trying to wiggle his way out, we see that when he speaks and says it's half, he doesn't really mean it's a half. His admission, it shouldn't be amigo because of the fact that his admission was compelled by the circumstances, not by his voluntarily making the statement. Therefore, Tosfot says that that's why we don't believe in amigo here, because the amigo is denied by the fact that the only reason he admitted to a portion of it is because of the fact that he really should have admitted to the whole amount, but he's trying to buy time to get the money. If that's the case, then we would not apply amigo, because his believability has now been diminished by the fact that we have an impetus for him saying this rather than simply that he's telling the truth. So in summary, according to Rashi, when a person is kofer bakol in the case of a milvav alone, the person will be believed because it goes against the chazaka, which is chazaka ein adam meiz panav bifnei bal chovo, that an individual will not deny a claim against a party who has done a tovah, has done something good for him. If he does do that, and he does deny the claim, we're going to believe him because of the fact that he is denying a claim against what would be the chazaka for someone who normally would have been the recipient of a tovah. In addition, the reason that we don't believe him when he is modeh b'miksat, and we don't consider him to be a meshiv aveda, as Rashi says over here, as if he's voluntarily giving back money that he didn't have to give, is because kofer akol was not a real option for him. Denying the claim is not an option for him. And since the denying the claim is not a real option for him, when he goes and volunteers to give back half of it, that is not considered to be meshiv aveda. It's not considered to be that he's just voluntarily giving and being nice and giving the money back, because he really couldn't deny it because of the chazaka in adam meiz panav bifnei bal chovo. And so for that reason, if he's kofer bakol by milveh, he is patur, even from a shvua before the institution of shvuat hesed, where then he would be chayav a shvuat hesed for the kofer bakol. In the case of modeh b'miksat, he's chayav a shvua because of Rabba's reasoning over here, because he's not being meshiv aveda, but rather he is doing this because the option of kofer akol is not open to him, because he can't deny this in front of his bal chov. And the reason why the person is modeh b'miksat by a milveh is because they really should have admitted to the whole thing, but they can't bring themselves to do that because they don't have the money currently, and therefore they're trying to buy time until they pay it back. And even though they're willing to, quote-unquote, lie about this, their lie is not directed to deny or exempt themselves from the claim, but rather just to buy themselves more time to pay it back. And for that reason, even though they have a question mark about their believability with regards to the mamon, they still maintain their nemanut with regards to this shvua. And we don't say, migo de choshed amamona, he's choshed ashvuato. But that means that by a case of pikadon, where the individual didn't do meitova, Rashi says, meyuzu meyuz, that he would deny it, and he would be kofer bakol. And therefore, according to Rashi, if you're kofer bakol by a shomer, that doesn't automatically give you believability, because you're not working again as a chazaka. On the other hand, the Balei HaTosafot, who subscribe to this position of the Riva, suggests that kofer akol, the chazaka that we're speaking about here, is that a person won't lie face-to-face to someone who knows the truth. That equally applies to a malveh, a debtor looking at the creditor, as well as a case of pikadon. In both those cases, the individual who deposited with them, or the individual lent the money, knows the truth, and therefore they won't deny it. Therefore, if they're kofer bakol, if you deny that completely, you should be believed in those cases, because you're going against the chazaka. On the other hand, when it comes to modeh b'miksat, that should also give you believability by modeh b'miksat from a migo. The migo is that, had you been kofer bakol, you would have been completely potur. That means if you're modeh b'miksat, you certainly should be believed, because you had a better ta'ana to be kofer bakol. Now that you are modeh b'miksat, we will believe you because migo, that you could have made the better ta'ana, instead made this ta'ana, then we grant you believability. But we don't say that here because of the fact that your admission or partial admission is not being driven by the fact that you're telling the truth, but it's really being driven by the fact that you're too scared to be kofer bakol because of this chazaka, that you're not going to lie face to face to the individual who knows the truth. And so your modeh b'miksat is not driven by your nemanut, your believability, but rather being driven by the fact that you can't be kofer bakol, and that's what eliminates the migo in this case. And the reason that the modeh b'miksat is not considered to be a hazah, according to Tosafot, which should then automatically give him nemanut, because the person opposite him knows the truth is because he's not really denying the claim completely. He's denying it to buy time and pay it back in the end. So he doesn't see this as a denial against the claimant, and therefore he doesn't see this as being a ha'azah. And since it's not a ha'azah, you don't gain automatic believability because you're willing to go against what would be the normal psychology of an individual. Because over here, you don't see this as a denial of a claim against a party who knows the truth because you're planning on paying back the whole thing. And that's why you're not believed by the case of Modeh B'Miktzat. And that's what the Torah says. We're going to impose a shvu'ah on you because we know this Modeh B'Miktzat is really you wanted to admit to the whole thing, but you're just buying time to pay it back. And the reason you're not kofer bakol is because of this chazaka. And Tosafot just adds that in the Rivash Shita, even in a case where a person is meiz panav, if he's kofer bakol, he denies the whole claim, he's patur, because that's a gzeirat ha-katuv. The pasuk says, ki hu zeh, you're only chayav by Modeh B'Miktzat, you're not chayav by kofer bakol. So now the Gemara says, umay kal v'chomer. What is this kal v'chomer which says that if you're Modeh B'Miktzat, you're chayav? Certainly, edim that come along, you should be chayav. Where do we see that edim are more stringent or stronger form of proof than a Modeh B'Miktzat, a person who admits it of his own volition? So Gemara says, umapiv, shein mechayvo mamon, mechayvo shvua, his own admission will not obligate him in monetary payments, but it will generate a need for a shvu'ah. Edim shemichayvim oto mamon, inu din shemichayvim oto shvu'ah. By the case of edim, where they do impose a monetary obligation on him, then certainly he should have to take a shvu'ah. Which is that, if by Modeh B'Miktzat, we say you take a shvu'ah, even though a Modeh B'Miktzat generates a shvu'ah, Modeh B'Miktzat cannot generate a monetary obligation, then certainly in the case where edim come along, where they can generate shchiyuv mamon, so you see that edim are on a higher level or a more powerful in this situation because they can create or obligate in both of those scenarios, and therefore certainly if Modeh B'Miktzat is chayav shvuah, then certainly edim should generate that same necessity for a shvuah. It says upiv eino mechayav mamon. It's a nice idea, but since when can a person not obligate themselves in monetary payments? Va'udat b'edin kamei edim dami. The admission of a party to a case is tantamount to 100 edim. It's as if they have 100 edim now testifying to that fact. And if a person admits they owe money, even if other edim come and say, you don't owe the money, he's not out of the money. He has to pay it because he admitted to the fact that he owes the money. The other edim coming along and saying, you don't owe the money, doesn't change that scenario, and he would still have to pay the money. So you see that Odat Baldin has a tremendous amount of power, and therefore, your whole Kal V'Chomer falls apart now, because even under the case of Modeh B'Miktzat, or Piv, when he is doing the speaking, he can generate a monetary obligation upon himself. So Gemara says, my mamon, what's the definition of the word mamon here? Knas. It's a fine. Uma Piv, shein mechaybo knas. Of his own speaking, he cannot generate a obligation of knas, or a penalty, because we have the principle, Modeh B'Knas, is patur. Since a Modeh B'Knas is patur, then by his piv, he cannot generate knas. But nevertheless, he's mechaybo shvua. By the case of Modeh B'Miktzat, he can generate a shvua. Edim shemechaybin oto knas. Outside edim who come and testify about what he did, can impose a knas on him. Enu din shemechaybin oto shvua. Certainly, they should generate the shvua of Modeh B'Miktzat. But it says, wait a minute. Mala piv shekein mechaybo korban. Tomar be'edim she'en mechaybo oto korban. Kal v'chomer only works when the item is always more chamur than the other item. It would have to be that edim are always more powerful than his own admission. Problem is now we just came up with a case where his admission is worth more than edim coming and testifying, which is, of his own admission, he can generate an obligation to bring a korban. But edim cannot generate an obligation to bring a korban. It says, alokasha rabbi chia ki rabbi meir svirlei. Rabbi Chiya holds like Rabbi Meir, who says that edim mechayvin oto korban mikal v'chomer. That edim do have the ability to force a korban from a kal v'chomer. That's none, which is a mishnah. Amar lo shnayim achal techelev. Two witnesses come along and say you ate chelev and you're chayav a korban chadat. V'omer lo achalti, and he denies the claim. Rabbi Meir mechayev. Rabbi Meir says go and bring a korban now. You have two edim testifying the fact that you are chayav a korban, and your denial over here does not make a difference to the fact that the edim are testifying, just like in any other case. Your denial would make no difference. But the Chachamim are putrim. The Chachamim say he is patur. He doesn't have to bring a korban. If two Edim can testify in a capital case and bring him to the death penalty, certainly they should be able to generate an obligation to bring a korban, which is a lesser threshold for Edim to be believed in. Rabbanon answers, the individual who is denying the claim of the Edim can actually agree with the Edim and still not have to bring a korban. Because they come along and said, you ate chalev. He goes, yeah, I ate chalev. But you're only chayav a korban when you eat chalev b'shogeg. He says, yeah, I ate chalev, but I did it b'mezid. So he himself can get himself out of the korban, even if we accept the testimony of the Edim. Because the Edim can testify about the act. What they can't testify about is his intent at the time of the act. So they come along and say, he ate chalev. He says, yeah, I did eat chalev, but I was b'mezid. I don't have to be a korban. Since he could do that, when he denies eating the chalev, we're going to believe him. The fact is that since the Edim's testimony cannot force him to a korban because he has a way out bring the korban, then when he says, I don't owe it, we can't force him to bring a korban. So that's the Chachamim's position. The truth is that Rashi quotes over here what seemingly is the real reason that he doesn't bring a korban, which is that the limud from the psukim is vehit vada. When he admits, then he brings a korban. But that means if someone else imposes, you don't have to bring a korban. That seemingly is the real reason behind the Chachamim's position. They're just responding to Rabbi Meir and saying, even if you want to make a logical argument would suggest that a deem cannot impose a korban, since the party who you're claiming is guilty can even agree with the deem and still get out of the korban. And so therefore, they shouldn't be able to impose a korban. But if that's the case, the Kav HaChomer breaks down, because now you have an area where a deem are the kula, or that Hodat Piv is the Chumrah. If that's the case, you can't make a Kav HaChomer from Hodat Piv to Edim. So Rabbi Chiya will subscribe to Rabbi Meir's position, and therefore his Kav HaChomer can stay intact. Tosfot over here asks, why don't we say when the Chachamim come along and say that he doesn't bring a Korban because he could say, Mezid Ha'iti, I did it intentionally, isn't that under the injunction of Ein Adam Mesim Etzmo Rasha? And here he's making himself into a Rasha by saying that he's Mezid. So Tosfot says over here that it could be in a process of tshuva. The guy wants to do tshuva. He's trying to rectify the situation, but he knows he did it intentionally. If he listens to the Edim, he's going to bring a korban, which he's not supposed to bring. He's going to bring chulin le'azara. He's not Edim Masim Etzmo Rasha. Even in a case where he's not trying to incriminate himself, he's just trying to tell the truth in order to do tshuva, that statement will have meaning. And that's why Tosfot says it's not under the rubric of Ein Adam Masim Etzmo Rasha. So Gemara says, Ela, Malapiv Shekem Mechaivo Hasham. Well, by the Piv that it obligates him to bring a Korban Hasham, whereas Edim will not compel him to bring a Korban Hasham. Hasham, Ainu Korban. Hasham is the same thing as a Korban. If you remember back in the Gemara in Baba Kama, we had a machloket as to whether Hasham meant the principal amount of the money that he stole, or the Hasham mean the Korban that he is going to bring for denying a monetary obligation under oath. So the Gemara concluded over there, we brought different brightot. The Gemara concluded over there that the Hasham references the principal amount, not the Korban. But what we can say is that if you believe that Hasham is the Korban, then you've eliminated the whole problem. Because once it's Korban, you go back to being Rabbi Meir. And we already said Rabbi Chiya holds like Rabbi Meir, that in a case of a Korban, a deem can force a Korban. Elamala piv shken mechayvo chomesh. So what about the fact that his own admission can generate a need to pay a chomesh? We saw that again in Baba Kama, that when he admits to lying under oath and denying a claim, he has to pay back Karen, Chomesh, and the Korban. That Chomesh is a result of his own admission. Had the Edim testified to the fact that he had lied under oath, then he would not be Chayim the Chomesh in that case, because Chomesh only comes about from Odat Piv. It says, Lokasha, Rabbi Chiya, ki Rabbi Meir Sfirle. He holds like Rabbi Meir. Tehechin mechayv lei korban mi kav chomer, mechayv lei chomesh mi kav chomer. Rabbi Meir's logic as to why you're chayav a korban is because Edim can cause you to have a death penalty. They can testify in capital cases and make a difference in the case. If that's true, then they certainly should be able to, number one, obligate a korban, and number two is force the payment of chomesh. Because by Hodat Piv, yes, he can obligate himself monetarily, but Hodat Piv can't, in a capital case, end up generating the death penalty if we don't have witnesses there. So according to Rabbi Meir, the Edim are so powerful, whatever works by Hodat Piv should also work by Edim. And if Edim can cause the death penalty, they should be able to cause a Korban, they should be able to cause the payment of a Chomesh. So Rabbi Chia will subscribe to Rabbi Meir's position in both of these areas, and therefore his Kal V'Chomer can stay intact. Ela Mala Piv Shkeinu Eino B'Chachashav Azama. When a person testifies to something, meaning that he admits to doing something, then even if Edim come along and deny the fact that he owes money, for instance, he says, I owe 100 zuz. Edim come along and say, no, you don't. You already paid it back. Those Edim cannot exempt him in that case. That denial doesn't change the fact that he owes the money because he said so. Uba azama. And the same is true by azama. Azama is when imanu ayitem. That won't matter. Yehudat b'adim kamei Edim. Tell me, if the Edim come along, they can't be machishim. They can't force him or deny his claim. Again, like you're saying, Edim can only functionally move him from being innocent to guilty. What they can't do is, if he admits to guilt, they can't flip him to being innocent in that case. And so therefore, the Edim have no hachash over here, and they have no azama. It's not applicable by the Baal Din. When we say that Hodat Baal Din is Kamei Edim Dami, that's only in monetary matters. Because in monetary matters, the individual can obligate himself. He can basically say, I want to give it as a gift. We've seen this before, that he can generate an obligation on himself. In capital cases and other those type cases, Hodat Baal Din will not make any difference because Ein Adam Mesim Etzmo Rasha. So a person can't incriminate himself. The Torah does not permit an individual to incriminate themselves. Therefore, their admission means nothing in the case or in capital cases. The admission is only meaningful in monetary cases. In those monetary cases, then, the hachash of the edim doesn't mean anything, and there's no hazama. So by piv, there is no hachash, no hazama. Tomar be'edim, she'eshnam b'chachash of hazama. You're going to say it by edim that there is denial, meaning that if other edim come and say that you're wrong, then their edut goes out the window. Or if other edim come along and say, imanu edim, they also knock out the edut. So you see here that hodat piv is stronger than the case of edim, because hodat piv overcomes hachash, overcomes hazama, which a regular edut can't. So again, your kal v'chomer is broken down now because you have something where Hodat Piv is more chamor than the case of Edim. Ela Atchia Me'ed Echad. This is the source for the Kal V'chomer, which is Ma'ed Echad She'ein Mechayvo Mamon. A single Eid does not have the ability to generate a monetary obligation. Mechayvo Shvuah. He's able to generate an obligation in regards to Shvuah. Eid Echad can force the counterparty to have to deny the claim under oath if the Eid Echad can testify, even though the Eid Echad cannot be determinant in the case. He can't decide the case. So then, Edim Shemechaybin Oto Mamon, Einu Din Shemechaybin Oto Shvua, then Edim who can generate an outcome in the case, they can't force the movement of money, then certainly they should be able to generate the need or the necessity for a Shvua. Gemara says, these cases aren't comparable. When an Eid Echad compels the defendant to take a Shvuah, the Shvuah is to deny the claim of the Eid Echad. Whatever the Eid Echad says, you have to counter that with your Shvuah. In the case of the Edim, which generates the Modeh B'Mikzah scenario, the Shvuah that we're imposing is not to corroborate what they said or deny what they said, it's to uphold the fact that the denial is right. Which is when two edim come along and say, you're chayav 50, not 100. On the 50, he has to pay out. Their testimony is accepted with regards to the 50. He will take a shvuah about the kfirah, about the denial of the other half. That's not what the edim are testifying about. So he's taking a shvuah, not about what they're testifying about, but exactly what they're not testifying about. He has to take a shvuah. So the cases aren't comparable, because an Eid Echad generates a counter Shvuah that has to oppose the statement of the Eid, the entire testimony of that Eid. By two Eidim, we're trying to impose a Shvuah that's not coming to counter the claim of the Eidim, but actually to, in a sense, even corroborate what they're saying. Yeah, I owe half, but the denial part was right. And so that Shvuah is not equivalent. You can't make a Kal V'chomer like that. Just because an Eid Echad generates a Shvuah, that might be a Shvuah that has to deal with the material that he is speaking about. What you can't say then is that, generate a shvuah about something that we never spoke about. And so that's not a kal v'chomer that will generate a shvuah by two edim. And we'll have to continue tomorrow, two lines down on the top of Dalet Amud Aleph, to find out where Rabbi Chiya's kal v'chomer comes from, which says that if by modeh b'miksat you have to take a shvuah, then certainly edim should be able to generate the shvuah of modeh b'miksat for the defendant.